probably lose that music. It's nice music, but it's 7:30, and I think we'll start with World Watchers exactly at 7:30. How are you this evening? This is Mae Bressel, and this is KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. The first half of the program, I take telephone calls from you, and I expect a lively audience this evening. It's hard to compete with those Academy Awards. Everybody gets tuned up. Personally, I get sick and tired of the pre-Academy interviews and discussions with people. I think if I were home on Monday, I would just not turn it on at all. It's so boring to hear over and over the different artists and who's going to get it and the interviews, and I wonder why they don't just have it the night of the Academies instead of building up all these various people and taking them individually and collectively and analyzing them and talking about them and showing scenes from the movies. You almost know the punchline of every movie that is going to be up for an award. And it's getting so boring, and at least it is for me. I don't particularly like the movies anyway. And now I have a home box office. I don't know about you. I get all the old Academy Award movies last year's on the home box office, and after I see 10 minutes of them, I turn them off. I mean, even Sophie's Choice, Chariots of Fire, The Verdict, or whatever, I just can't get into those movies. At least I think what I'm doing is more interesting, so if I have something better to do, I just don't get into them, but maybe you do. If you have a question that you want to call about the news, and there is so much news out there, call me. I literally have almost a fried brain just keeping up or trying to keep up or even just separating into the categories, things that I want to have for you and share on the air, because we've had so many different subjects through the years, 13 years on the air, and when I see a news item, I want to update something that I talked about. Many of you have heard those broadcasts, current, old ones, updating information that's in the news right now. And I put it in a pile alphabetically by name and subject-wise and cross-file it sometimes, and I still never will get to a fraction of the items of interest that would update many of the things that we talk about. But if you have any questions, 375-3082, Mae Bressel, you can call and we can talk about some of the things that interest you. Ronald Reagan is getting close to the war power stage. There's going to be a conflict in Congress before the Supreme Court on the War Powers Act. He's anxious for that. We can talk about that or other subjects you want. I'll take the first call now.
Hello?
Hello, Mae.
Yes.
This is John.
Yes.
I talked to you a couple weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
My mother and my sister are here in town. They're listening in tonight.
Okay.
And I was wondering if it'd be all right if you kind of gave a brief little background on how you got started in your research.
Okay, where are your folks from?
They're from Southern California.
Southern California?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And they're up here listening, and you want them to listen to World Watchers?
Yes. My sister lives at Point Lobos. My mother lives in Sacramento now.
Oh, I see.
And,
Yeah, I was on a program station, I think it was KSAN, for 3 or 4 years up in Sacramento. If they like the program, they can subscribe to the tapes, too. There's a lot of people that subscribe. I was just listing in the notebook the different checks that people had sent in. It's done somewhere else. I don't do the business part of ordering or making the duplicate tapes. And people have ordered already through one quarter of 1985. So there's a good listening audience, and they send in checks, and they want to make sure they don't miss one, so we're into a quarter of next year. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah,
wait a second. Okay, so what you want, you've been telling them about Mae Bressel.
Yeah, I've been talking to them about you, and I want...
Want them to listen tonight, and you want me to give a little background.
Yeah.
Okay.
If it's not too much trouble.
No, that's what I'm here for.
Okay.
I like this part of the program. Do you want to stay on the air and ask questions, or do you want to hang up and let me talk?
I'll just hang up and let you talk.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. That's the purpose of this program. I'm controversial, and it's nice to get questions, know what you're thinking or feeling, and share some of the information. Where do I get my information, and so forth. I have been doing research. Okay, we'll hang up and we'll take it on the air. I've been doing research for 20 years. I started when John Kennedy was assassinated. In fact, in a little while, when the format changes, we take the phone calls for a half hour and then go to a program called World Watchers, which is 1 hour without calls. And on that program, I'll be mentioning the death of Senator Frank Church
he gave the nomination a speech for John Kennedy, the acceptance, along with John Kennedy, not the acceptance speech, when John Kennedy was nominated for President of the United States in 1960 in Los Angeles. Senator Frank Church gave the main speech, I guess, before John Kennedy spoke. I happened to be there, and I took our boys. They were old enough to go down there and to see a political event like that. And after John Kennedy won the election, he was murdered in Dallas, Texas, and I was very suspicious of the circumstances. I guess the word is suspicious of the way he was murdered, and watched the services on television like most people were doing. And then 2 days later, when Lee Harvey Oswald was being moved from the Dallas jail and he was killed in the Dallas Police Department, I started my research into who killed John Kennedy. And there were 20 or 12 of us original researchers around the country. We didn't know each other, but there were 20 people who started that day, not people who were curious, but people who actually began to collect newspaper articles. And then I got the first book out on John Kennedy. There were several. One was Joe Jostin's book, Oswald, Assassin or Fall Guy. And he had lived in Nazi Germany and fled the Nazis and gone to Norway. And he was kicked out of Norway and Sweden by the Nazis and went around through Asia and then eventually ended up back in Germany. When Kennedy was killed, he flew right to Dallas because he recognized the similarities to political assassinations in Germany, and that indeed was what was happening. And a man named Buchanan wrote a book on Oswald, and Leo Savage wrote one. Those were excellent books, and then Mark Lane came out with Rush to Judgment, and that began a series of books and muckrakers or investigators into American affairs. There are about 235 books on the Kennedy assassination now, I believe. Maybe 20 Defend the Warren Report, and the rest are all investigative journalism. And, of course, the articles began to add up. And I kept these and ordered the Warren Commission hearings in the fall of 1964. The government had 26 volumes of witnesses who testified and exhibits and documents that were supposed to support that testimony. And my work began then. It was simply a hobby. It still is a hobby, to just find out who killed the President of the United States. And from there, I went on to other murders that were similar. And there was Malcolm X and Martin Luther King and Medgar Evers. Medgar Evers came before Malcolm. And I saw a pattern, and so did a lot of other people, between these series of murders. And that's basically how I started my research. And I took the 26 volumes of the Warren Commission hearings, and it took me 9 years to, what I say, cross-file them, to retype into categories everything to do with Lee and Marina Oswald, particularly, not the ballistics or the Dealey plots or the autopsy material. I've read all that over and over again, but I wanted to study Lee and Marina as agents of the United States government, and that project really gave me an advantage over a lot of other researchers, I believe, because I broke down exactly how the intelligence system not only works, but how they cover up. And then the same principles and methods could be applied to other murders that followed. And I began to save books and amassed a library of a few thousand books and periodicals, magazines, and newspapers. And I take 10 papers every day at the house, and then I get clippings from other papers around the country. In fact, I just started subscribing to an English-speaking newspaper in Athens, Greece, and that started coming. And it became a full-time project to keep track of all these different elements that go into an assassination, the control of the news media, the payoffs or the promotion of judges or justices of the Supreme Court, such as Earl Warren. He was on the Warren Commission, and he was a chief justice, and then the lawyers that helped the commission all were benefited by promotions and big jobs and moved their way up the scale, the political scale of power by covering up the truth. And so basically I did that. And then in the 70s, I think it was 1973, 74, Ray Fabrizio was teaching a class that he teaches English at Monterey Peninsula College, and he's a gifted musician. And we gave a class together, two semesters on the American conspiracies, and I think those were the first two accredited college courses in the United States on political assassinations in America, and that went from John Kennedy up to the kidnapping of Patricia Hearst. So that's the way the work began. It evolved into studying the banks behind these conspiracies, the religions behind it. That doesn't mean religious people. It means certain parties from certain Jews that worked with Adolf Hitler or Mussolini, believe it or not, and took violence in the Middle East and kicked the British out and were allowed to create Israel in exchange for going along with becoming literally American military base. And there were certain Mormons, certain people from the Vatican, a lot from the Vatican, and certain elements of these conservative large churches like Reverend Moon. I refer to them. Just that new book came out on The Banks We Trust by Penny LaRue. It goes into the relationship of the mafia, organized crime, the crime syndicate, the churches, the Central Intelligence Agency, and the agencies of the United States government, the crime syndicate, the churches, murdered witnesses. And she doesn't cover the political assassinations, but she covers the banking traffic, and it's used for murders and for drug traffic. The mafia, the churches, and the government all merged together prior, during, and after World War II. So that's the background of constantly reading books and articles. And now I'm doing things. There's a very good reporter at the Washington Post who's doing stories on Edwin Meese. And I called her Friday. She returned the call today. And I gave her some good leads on places that she wasn't even familiar with, because you have to assume these reporters, even though they're good, know nothing, unless they're old-time reporters who've been around. And I didn't know her name. She's very good, Washington Post. And I gave her leads, and then there's an article coming out in People magazine this week, and I called the editor of People magazine about the John DeLorean lead, and we'll do more on that in a few minutes on World Watchers. So I'm in touch with different newspaper people I call, or I've called the staff of the House Judiciary, the Senate Judiciary, investigating Edwin Meese, and I haven't given a bad lead. That doesn't mean that what I give them that they're going to investigate, but the ones I give them will be very good, and if they go for them, they're good stories, and at some point they'll stop covering up, I hope. I was at the grocery store just before I came into the station, and I bumped into a lady I haven't seen for 3 or 4 years, and she has an art gallery now in town, and she said to me, "Are you still into the conspiracy?" She hasn't been listening to Kazoo, and I told her I was still on the air. And she said, "Remember when my house was burned down? They were active in the Peace and Freedom Party." I won't put her name on the air, of course. She said, "Remember when my house burned down 3 in the morning and the place was sprayed with gasoline and there were these posters all over the house? And I remember the incident. They almost died. They were asleep in this home and it caught fire instantly. Luckily, it was a Carmel house. They got out quickly." But she went to the police department in Carmel and asked if it was still an open case. And they said, "Yes, it is an open case." And she was looking at some of the circumstances around that arson. And she said the policeman in charge, whoever it was she talked to, said, "To tell you the truth," and this is just what she told me verbatim a few minutes ago, "I believe in those days that there was a lot of politics behind the arson. There were a lot of arsons, and it could have even been the CIA. So she said, "Are you interested?" I said, "Yes, considering everything that's happened to my family, maybe I should go over the Carmel police and see if they have anything about, I reported certain people that I consider dangerous. Luckily didn't have to go at the arson. We had other things, but they weren't in the hands of the Carmel police. I know the investigation." So, she was telling me that they were open enough to talk about it now, that these things in the past, we would have been called paranoid crazy. And again, it was Senator Frank Church's committee that opened up a lot of the avenues of what was going on in Washington, where he said the United States has lost its morality. Well, that's an almost 15-minute answer to the question. Well, if any of you have other questions, it's Mae Brussel. In case you turned in late, a new listener, a listener who has family visiting, asked me the background of how I happened to start the research and how it evolved. So I just basically went back to the very beginning, where I started investigating the murder of John Kennedy. If you have other questions or something you want to share on current movies, political subjects that you're interested in, or television shows that may be coming up that everyone could share, or books you've read, any interesting articles, are you reading good stories? Are they political? Are they nonfiction and interesting? I'd like to know what it is. Otherwise, we'll go into some more news before World Watcher starts. 375-3082 if you want to call in. I was just saying before the call that Ronald Reagan says the Congress impedes diplomacy. What do you think of that one? Okay, we'll take another call. We'll get back to Congress. Hello?
Hello, may I speak with Mr. Mason?
This is May. Who did you want?
Oh, excuse me. I am calling from Team 5, Racquetball League.
Oh, you are? What do you want?
Okay, I think my name is Haldun Pelit.
Uh-huh.
I think we have a game
mm-hmm.
This week. Which time is available for you?
Well, let me call you back, because I don't think it pertains to this program, so we'll have to get it a little later. Should I call you back?
Okay, sure.
Okay, what's your number?
373-0810. It's written on the sheet.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Well, we're glad to take a call. I don't know what he's talking about, but we'll, he says it's written on a sheet. Well, we'll take another call. Hello?
Hello, May.
Yes.
Yeah, I've found an interesting article in the newspaper.
Okay.
And it's about a man who fell, I think this is a mafia murder attempt cover-up.
Uh-huh.
He fell from a building of 24 stories in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
Gilmer McDonald, about 38, was in surgery at the Grady Memorial Hospital last night, suffering from injuries.
Uh-huh.
He had broken bones to his feet, legs, and ankles, and his left arm.
Uh-huh.
So it says, there is some word, don't know where we got this, that he caught his lifeline coming down and slowed his fall. I understand he hit the wall a time or two coming down.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think you're naive or anything, but it says, McDonald, an employee of window washing company, was listed in poor but stable condition.
Yeah.
Now, do you think this is a cover-up?
Well, I saw that in the paper, but I wouldn't know what he was doing. I wouldn't know why it would be mafia. I mean, do you think he was thrown out the window?
Well, I don't know. The article kind of speaks for itself.
Well, if it speaks for itself, I'm not getting the message. That is...
Okay. I really enjoy your show, but I couldn't resist calling in.
Okay, fine.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Believe it or not, I don't consider every article or every accident a conspiracy. There may be some good window washers that are thrown out the window. In fact, I was just reading some of the documents on the mind control program that Senator Church found and with his committee investigating the CIA and mind control program. And apropos of this evening's broadcast, and I was going to do that, but I thought I'd do one whole night just on the program and review it because a lot of people don't remember it. But this Mr. Frank Olson from the Central Intelligence Agency was given LSD surreptitiously by the CIA, and he was taken to a hotel in New York City. And Mr. Gottlieb of the CIA arranged this, and Richard Helms was behind this, and another gentleman, Dr. Abramson. And when he fell out the window, they called and told the hotel and the newspapers that he was suffering from an ulcer, that that's why he died. So the CIA had poisoned him, and he went flying out the window. And the newspaper said he was in town to treat an ulcer. We'll take another call and get back to those window falls. Hello?
Hello, May.
Yes.
You don't really talk about nuclear power too much, but I thought this was interesting.
Okay.
There was an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
An NRC.
Yeah.
Isa Yin.
Yeah.
And a few weeks ago, he came out and said that there's a lot of problems with Diablo Canyon.
Yeah.
And now apparently he's retracted his statements, and I just can't help but think that he's been paid off or bribed. Or...
Where does he live?
Well, he's from Chicago.
Chicago?
But he was called out to Diablo Canyon.
And, yeah, that's what I mean. He worked at Diablo?
Yeah.
And he said there were problems with it?
Yeah, lots of problems with the piping, the small and large bore piping.
Uh-huh.
And the safety restraints,
uh-huh.
Earthquake safety. And about 3 weeks ago, the NRC was going to vote to license the plant, and he came out with all these allegations.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden...
all of a sudden it's safe?
It seemed, yeah, that it was unsafe. And that if they went radioactive, then... it'd be much harder to fix any problems that he suspected existed.
Oh, I see.
And now it seems like 3 weeks later he's been paid off or bribed or something.
Yeah.
And he's retracted his position.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and you think that somebody got to him.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. And
yeah.
After listening to your show. You
a
know,
little gun in his back or something like that?
No,
that's the way it works, you know. I mean, why would he say it's clear and then he says it's not?
Well, that's a big question in my mind, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, one of the ways that I get information is to read as much as I can and try to remember or put away things like this that seem strange, and then you find that they're not very strange, they happen over and over again, and then if you're a collector like me, you see his name in the news 2 months from now, and he's had a one-car accident around a tree. You know, that's what this work is interesting because I'm sure there's a lot of murders of witnesses that I'm missing, and I'm sure maybe there's a lot of circumstances that are coincidental that I am putting as a possibility, but there always are a lot of consequences that follow after I've done a broadcast, but it's 1, 2, 5, 6 years. Some of them 10 years later. A woman was kidnapped at the time Patty Hearst was kidnapped in Minneapolis, and I had it on the air and published an article in 1974 about this woman and the case. The guy was linked to the FBI, and then 10 years later there was a murder in Santa Cruz and two people were decapitated, and the gun was delivered from Santa Cruz where the murders took place to this Jerry Johnson, who was responsible for that kidnapping, and they said he worked with the FBI. So 10 years later, you know, they confirmed what I suspected right along. So this man, see what happens to him, just as a little project. If you keep articles, do you save them?
Well, sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, we pass things away, and maybe you don't have enough room. I don't know. There's never enough room to keep all the things you want. But changing his opinion is an interesting thing to see, and that's what does happen. There are people that say, a member of the Rockefeller Commission will say, I don't approve of this report, I don't think it happened this way, and then the report comes out and his signature's on it.
Uh-huh.
The Warren Commission, Mr. Russell of Georgia, Richard Russell, didn't think that the way it was written about Lee Harvey Oswald happened that way, and he voiced his criticism of the report, and then he signed it. So if you don't collect the early articles going back to 1964 and you see a signature, you assume that he knows what he signed.
All right. Well, I really enjoy your show.
Good. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, several weeks ago, I talked about, was more than a few weeks ago, a little while back, the what was supposed to be an earthquake in Carmel Valley. It felt like some kind of an explosion, and then the experts said that they revised it and said it was near Bixby Creek, down near Big Sur, and then they said the aftershock hits Monterey. Well, we'll get back to that earthquake. We'll take another call, and I'll get back to that earthquake in a moment. Hello?
Yes, I may. Do you have anything on the Campaign for a Positive Future candidate by the name of Barbara Marx Hubbard?
Barbara Marx Hubbard. That name's familiar. Where's she from?
I think she's from Southern California.
Yeah.
And she's running on a very interesting platform, which in essence is trying to make the vice presidency a more important position,
mm-hmm.
and one that would try to tap into a certain people power that's around.
Yeah, like who?
Well, just like us.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I don't think that the president, maybe I mentioned it last week, I don't know, I've done some other radio shows, the president should name who his vice president is going to be so we know who we're voting for. You know, who would want George Bush, the director of the CIA, with all the mafia money and the murders and the surreptitious activity going on? That's picked as an afterthought. You know, there may be whispers about it. I would like to know who the vice president is. Now, Gary Hart's talking about his campaign. I'm scared to death. I'm more scared of him than anyone I can think of, because he's already naming his cabinet, and that's worse.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to watch for this woman, because so far, whatever I've seen has been of a very forward nature, and something that really seems trying to reactivate a kind of thrust that was available to us in the 60s.
Barbara Marx Hubbard. Well, if anybody has anything on her, send it to me and I'll look it up. Barbara Marx was the name of Frank Sinatra's wife before she married. I think she's married to Zeppo or one of those.
Yeah, no, this is an...
I know, it's a different
this
one.
This is an M-A-R-X.
No, I know, she's not going to run.
Right.
When you said Barbara Marx, I said, oh, no.
Right, that would
he's
be...
He's not running his wife.
Strangers in the Night.
Strangers in the Night, yeah. Or I Did It My Way.
Right.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, yeah, thanks a lot.
Bye.
If you hear any more about the platform of Barbara Marx, let me know. Just quickly, there's another call. We'll get back to the earthquake in a minute. It's May. This is 375-3082. We'll take this call. Hello?
Hi, Meg.
Yes.
I was wondering about the heroin bust that supposedly happened just today and what ties there are there with the syndicate. And
well, how big is the bust in what city? I didn't see today's bust, but I'll bet you it wasn't the Japanese mafia.
Well, it had to do with supposedly new syndicate figures, and
uh-huh.
It was in New York City, one pizza parlor in particular, and apparently they were passing the heroin through the different parlors.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a huge bust in New York City of 22 people last week who were responsible for murdering 25 or more. In fact, they murdered the Esposito father and son, the people that were in the White House with Rosalynn Carter, one of them when fundraising, and then the two of them were killed because they didn't want them to have so much prominence being in the White House.
Uh-huh.
They killed 25 people. That was a big bust with the Gambino family. Because of that bust, they may have to, as an excuse to let some of those awful assassins off, they'll give them tips to take another bust. I wouldn't be surprised if there'll be that kind of bust. Now, say Bolivia is not in the hands of Claus Barbie anymore, so if there's a socialist government, if it's fascist, they don't mind them dealing the cocaine because then it brings in dollars and bought from America for weapons and gun running and death squads. But if the government changes hands like Argentina or Bolivia, then they say, well, now we got to stop the drug traffic, and so we send in our army to go down there to Colombia, you know, and interfere so they can't have the profit from the drugs. If it's not going to be in the hands of a dictator, forget it.
Right.
But the New York bus, I haven't read the details, but I wouldn't be surprised because, in a few weeks to come, I'll do a lot on the Espositos and the Carters when I get a chance. But because when you drag in, like, 20 important people, one will want immunity to squeal on the others and some of his buddies to get off.
Mm-hmm.
So that may be happening in New York, where they're squealing on each other.
I see. Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, well, it's just 3 minutes up. I don't know if we have time for another call here before we begin World Watchers. I'll quickly get back another time here to the Big Sur earthquake we were talking about. I was a little suspicious because that week Fort Ord was doing some testing of some great big weapons, and a listener to this program, a long listener, World Watcher, sent me an article, March 8th, San Jose Mercury, 1984. This was after the earthquake down at Big Sur. That took place earlier this year, about a month before this article came out. It says, it appears likely that the Pentagon will phase out of their 26-year-old Point Sur naval facility. The facility is engaged in classified underwater acoustic experiments. It is staffed by 125 Navy personnel and 20 civilians. The phasing out of the facility is being considered as a money-saving operation because technological advances have made the research in undersea detection conducted there unnecessary, according to Congressman Panetta's office. So what was their under Point Sur that they were doing? They're going to close that facility and not use it anymore for classified underwater acoustics experiments. And that happened right after that big explosion that was supposed to be out in the valley. Oh, there's a call now, but I can't take it. We just have 1 minute, and World Watchers begins in 1 minute. Okay, here's a 30-second call. Hello? Yeah, yeah. Oh, I understand there's all kinds of purposes for being there, but there also was that crazy bang that evening that I don't really felt like a earthquake, and I know that they are experimenting with this kind of thing, too. I'm not saying they did it, but there are a lot of interesting phenomena that appear to be earthquakes that aren't always, based upon some other research I have. Okay, thanks for calling. Bye-bye. That's a quickie, and we got on to that subject, an interesting subject for sure, and we'll be doing more on that the other time. And this is, in the meantime, we'll take a station identification. This is Mae Brussel, and it's KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California.